How are you, my friend?
I am well. Clayton, how are you?
I'm doing well. Hey, would you say that you're a good tipper?
I'd say I'm average. I don't ever really stiff anybody on a tip, but I rarely give really good tips. It really takes something to motivate me to want to dig deep on a tip.
Yeah, like what? Like what would get you to go over the line, cross the line?
Just like the kind of service where I'm never annoyed. Like,
That would be rare, wouldn't it?
Right. I really mean like once a year. Once a year, you know, I have a server where, like, I'm not like, where is this person or why is this wrong or, you know, my drink has been empty for 10 minutes as I make the empty straw noise. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's like once a year.
That's the worst. You know, especially if you're like me and you like a lot of coffee. When I go out to breakfast, I know it's sort of cliche, right? I think it's almost like the Reservoir Dogs complaint. Steve Buscemi is complaining at the beginning of Reservoir Dogs about the service and how he just wants his coffee cup always full.
Right.
You know, so you've got to deal with that. You've got to deal with like a waiter or waitress that's like floating around. But, breakfast shift, that's got to be the hardest, right? Because they're up at like 5 a.m. They got to deal with like the senior crowd that's probably not going to tip them very much.
Right.
They're still, operating on like an 8% tip. They're like, what?
whatever worked in the Great Depression.
Right.
You know, they're like, President Hoover urged us not to tip more than 8%. I think...
send your war bonds.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know what the worst shift would be, but I was recently... oh, my God. Where were we on this recent trip of ours? We were in Portland, Maine. And,
I hear that's beautiful, by the way, isn't it?
I'm not going to speak to that. But... After we had it was a very hot and sweaty Chikara event, and we had to kind of break the, you know, it's a large caravan of people that travel when we're on the road, and we have to get everybody situated into their hotel rooms. And the two guys that I was traveling with, we decided there was a Denny's in the parking lot of the hotel where we were, and it was late. I mean, everything else was closed. And, you know, it was like 1:32 a.m. in the morning, and we thought, we got to eat something. We have to eat something that's like a meal because, you know, when you're on the road, it's just like fast food, whatever's along the turnpike, that sort of thing.
Right.
And I had what was probably the worst meal I've had in years. I think I got 4 bites of it down.
What was it?
And it was like some kind of like beef pot roast or something. And on the menu, it looked like the greatest thing ever. For like a late rainy night, it looked like a plate of comfort food. It should have been great. And it was awful. And this waitress that we had, she was ignoring one of the guys that I was with. Like, he would say something, she would just ignore him and walk away, which was very peculiar. And then finally she came back,
maybe she had a thing for him. Like, she'll play coy, right? That's how right. women do it.
Mm-hmm. She was kicking him under the desk, but then at recess, she was winking at him. So our collective... anger about the way we were being dealt with. But she had, like, the whole restaurant to deal with by herself. It wasn't as if it was, we couldn't figure out what was the motive here. But she came back after having ignored us for the most part, and it was, irritating, and it's late at night. All we want is to just eat something and go to bed. And so she comes back seeing that I've eaten 4 bites of this, and you would think there was never one of these where she stops back 2 minutes in and says, "Is everything okay?" Which is a really important thing, I think, for a server to do. I can't tell you how many times, like in the heyday of Lone Star Steakhouse, like my steak was never done right. Like when I said "well done," like I don't want it to be bloody in the middle. You know what I mean? You've got to go put this thing back on for a few minutes. We got no "is everything okay" visit. So she comes back 15 minutes later. They're done. I've taken 4 bites of this. She says, "Do you want me to wrap that so you can take it with you?" And I said, "No, it's inedible." And this really, really upset her. And she was holding the plate in a way that I, for a moment, really thought, I think she's going to fling the food on me. Like, I think that's where she's like, she's reached the breaking point, and I was the fool that put the one straw too many on this camel's
right,
back.
Like, this was the moment she'd been waiting for her entire waitressing career. Like,
right.
Eventually, you know, she's about to graduate with her MBA or something like that. She'd been slinging hash through school right. just so she could make it, and she knew someday, she's told her friends around the dorm room that eventually, this was going to be the time. Sometime, she was going to flip if she got one of these idiot customers who just complained late in the night, she's been there all day. You could have been that guy. That would have been right. incredible.
I think, especially given she was in her early 60s, living in a dorm room for that much of her life would have pushed her to the brink.
But, it would have pushed her over.
I really did think for a minute, like, this is it. Like, I'm going to wear this pot roast in a minute.
Maybe it would have been better than eating it.
Probably. I observed that, I mean, she was being kind of discourteous with everyone she was dealing with. And the vast majority of the people in the restaurant by this point were like, the people from Chikara, you know what I mean?
Right.
We were all, even though she didn't realize it, like, we all knew each other in this restaurant, and we're all kind of observing her demeanor. But anyway, this does call this to mind, and this is going to sound like a bad stand-up comedian routine, and I'm pretty sure this is someone's stand-up comedian routine. And I want to bring this up to you. This is going to turn into a rant, I think, probably on the part of both of us. By the time you get to the front of the line at McDonald's, and given the ubiquitous nature of McDonald's, you should never utter this phrase, what do I want?
Yeah.
What do you guys have? Do you guys have burgers? Like, what?
Yeah,
McDonald's, one, you know what they have, and two, they serve everything now because they compete with everybody, right? Starbucks starts to eat up part of the market share for fast food. They open the McCafe solution, so you go there, right? Chick-fil-A has these chicken sandwiches with the pickles on them. All of a sudden, there's the Southern-style chicken sandwich at McDonald's. Everything you can think of is served by McDonald's.
Right. There should be no reason why when you get to the front of the line, you can't figure it out, unless the line is long. Now, I will say
forget? It's McDonald's.
No,
you know what you're having.
I think it's possible that if the line is a certain length, that there's a possibility that you get to the front of the line, and because you've been in line so long, your mood has changed.
Mm.
And that's happened to me, right? Like, when I first got in line, I'm like, I'm getting the number two, right? Which, off the top of your head, you should know is a quarter pounder with cheese meal, right? Delicious. It's hard to beat that, right?
Back in the day, that was the number four. But go ahead.
Right. I think it is. Is it the number two now?
I don't, because I don't eat anything with cheese. I wouldn't know. But I remember from my days as a McEmployee that the two cheeseburger meal was the number two. The quarter pounder was the number four.
So then when you get up to the front, then you're like, wow, man, things have shifted. I've been in line now for 10 minutes. I had to wait for the kids to order, had the kids and the family to order all the Happy Meals and the kid to complain that he wanted the Incredibles toy instead of the Batman toy, whatever it is. And then by the time I get up there, I'm like, you know what? The fish fillet sandwich sounds delicious now. But it shouldn't take you. Oh yeah, fish fillet is great.
Clayton worked at McDonald's too. Let me say, as I just out this, do you remember this? Because Clayton and I worked at McDonald's at roughly the same time, just at two different restaurants.
Right.
Did your store have this, that there was a number 8 value meal that was unlisted anywhere, but you could get it on the register?
It's like the secret Easter egg value meal. But see, I never worked the register, so I never knew. Was it like the double fish fillet?
No, it was the Filet-O-Fish for a while didn't have its own value meal.
Really?
But it was the number 8. You could call it up on the register, and some people knew that. You know something, Clayton? I don't know when my quarterly tax payments are due. But I could tell you everything about the extra value meal menu at McDonald's from 1994 to 1995.
But, those people, and it's interesting because they have no tolerance, right? So when you get up to the front of the line, the people who are working the cash register like yourself, I mean, yeah, you should have picked it all out. You should have mapped it out. You've been there a number of times. You should know that you need, you want the number 2 value meal with a medium, you're going to get a medium drink, so you want Diet Coke. It's not a mystery. Right. You know what drinks they're serving.
Right.
Right. They've got iced tea is the only thing that doesn't have high fructose corn syrup in it. Or you get Coke, you get whatever it's got. You get Dr. Pepper. But you shouldn't be that indecisive when you get up to the front of the line.
Yeah, it's not as – I could see at most the question you could have is this Coke or Pepsi products? Like, maybe you don't know that all McDonald's are Coke products, right? But no one's like, do you guys have RC Cola? Or like, what's the third brand? I don't even know if there is one, right? Like, are you guys serving a treat in here?
Do you guys have Tab? Because I only drink Tab. Do you guys have that?
Yeah, that's what they have. They have Tab, Tang, and Juicy Juice. That's what they have.
Juicy Juice.
All the alternative ones. And Capri Suns with worms in them. So I observed this just like a day or two ago. I was at a Qdoba. Which is sort of like, in terms of the fast food industry, I see it as like at least one step up from Taco Bell. But it's like burritos, tacos, that type of thing, right?
But it's one, I will have to say, it's one or maybe even three steps down from Chipotle, which is...
See, I dislike Chipotle, so I'll argue that one with you.
See, here's why I will argue it, because Chipotle's, like all the... It was like no hormones, no anything like in the disgusting in the food. It's all like locally grown. The only thing that they can't get local is like the lettuce, apparently. But like the chicken is like free range chicken. There's no antibiotics. There's nothing in it. And so, and you know, they've now started serving brown rice to get you away from that like enriched, you know, white rice. So I love Chipotle, and it's all like fresh and stuff. But Qdoba, I had a burrito there a few weeks ago. And it just tasted like feet. It tasted like feet compared to Chipotle, which just tasted fresh and delicious. But I guess it depends on what you order there, right?
Well, certainly, yeah. It depends on what you order, and who knows? Maybe they, you know, they saw this guy coming. They're like, isn't that pretentious dude that's always over at Chipotle? Somebody walk on his burrito,
right? Someone put their feet in the meat.
But I observed this relationship, and I've seen this before. I just don't run into it often. But it was pouring down rain. Like, I was in a hurry. I did not have time to be delayed by anybody. And I observed what appeared to be maybe like a mother-son, where, like, the mother was a senior citizen and the son was fully grown. And the person behind the counter spoke perfect English. There wasn't, like, an accent to be dealt with here. It wasn't like they were a low talker, which is a big pet peeve of mine. And she would say to the son... But this was – he was, you know, like telling the order for his mother. She would say, do you want black beans or pinto beans? And we are all – me as the observer, the person working at Qdoba, and this pair, we are all within at most 4 feet of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And she'd say, do you want black beans or pinto beans? And he would turn to the mother and repeat it. Mother, do you want black or pinto beans? She would respond, you know, like, whatever, pinto beans. He'd turn back to her and say, pinto beans. But as I said, we are all within 4 feet of each other. Like, there's an extra layer of communication happen. Like, why do you have to interpret the perfect English of the employee of Qdoba for your mother?
Right.
Like, she, her ear is as close to this other person as is yours. Like, and it was becoming maddening. Because there were a lot of questions, you know. What, do you want this kind of cheese? Mother, do you want this? Oh, yes, she wants this kind. She can hear her. She's right here. Like, what? And those situations, I become like Jake Johansson when his keys were locked in the car, as you recall. I'm looking around for a referee.
Right.
Because this does not need to be happening like this. Like, we can cut the time of the line down here if maybe these two communicate directly, son, without you in the mix.
I don't understand that. Maybe she needed like an interpreter. Maybe it's the way that he pronounces his consonants that she finds, you know, she's able to understand better because of that.
I was absolutely baffled. And I thought, I know you too, like at some point you've seen this in practical application, right? It's not like me describing this to you is the first time you've ever come across this, where there's like a proxy in the mix. Why? Why is there a proxy in the mix? You were unnecessary.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't get that.
Well, like I know – well, like my – you know, my dad has you know, has hearing aids now, of course. So
right,
he's a little
sure.
older. So, you know, like my mom, I think, knows how to project her voice in such a way that, you know, he'll understand it maybe better at dinner if the waitress is taking the order, in which case – and then sometimes he'll get annoyed, you know, because he'll like – he's like, I got it. You know, then sometimes he doesn't, and she'll have to repeat it. So on the off chance that he doesn't get it, she just wants to be there to make sure, you know, everything goes smoothly. But I could see that situation, right?
Yeah.
But when they're both the same distance away, and he's also the same distance from her as is the Qdoba person, then, you know, then there should be no reason for this. I will say this, though. I think I've noticed a change in the way that these types of places operate, because I remember back in the day, like at Chipotle – the first time I ever had an encounter with them, I think at the time they were owned by McDonald's.
Interesting.
Yeah, and you know they bought them, and then they sold them, and now the guy that runs it is like considered in the sort of down economy when many restaurants had been suffering. There was a recent piece I read on him where he's like, "Why is this CEO, you know, have like 40% profit increase at Chipotle when every other restaurant is suffering?" And it broke down like what the appeal is, you know. It's like people actually want healthy ingredients and, you know, that sort of thing. But I think – I don't know if McDonald's sold it back to him or what the history is. Maybe some eggheads can write us on our Grizzly Bear Cafe Twitter account, let us know. But McDonald's owned it at one point. When I lived in Dayton, Ohio, I went there. I would go there for, you know, right around lunchtime. And it would be packed in there. But I remember, you know, at McDonald's unloading it because I don't know if they knew what to do with it. Right. Mm-hmm. I think they wanted to sort of McDonald-ize it. So they were having like a central farm area, maybe out in the Midwest. They would get their food. And, you know, it wasn't as certainly not as fresh as it is now with the ingredients of local farms that they support. So McDonald's, I think, just felt like it wasn't part of their brand when that new CEO took over. And it was like, you know, we need, just need to cut the fat, so to speak. Let's focus back on McDonald's. Let's focus back on what makes us successful. And so they got rid of some of these other brands. And I remember them just, it was like a factory. You go in, and I was nervous to order anything from them. Even though they only have like 12 ingredients on the menu, it was like, okay, what can I get for you? I'll get a burrito. Okay, you want, all right, and what's next? And you, like, they throw it on the thing, they heat up the burrito, then they're like, the next line, you're like, what? And then someone else is taken over suddenly. Like, no, I was just talking to her. Why is this person now asking me what I want? You know, and then they're moving you down. There's somebody behind you.
Why is this person putting lettuce on my burrito with their toes?
Right. Like, why? I don't get this. Why is that person helping me? You were just helping me. Now you're handing it off to her. Now sliding down the line, I feel like I'm in a factory. You know, it just goes so fast. And like, what do you want on this? I'm like, I'll do a little of both beans, you know, black beans and pinto beans. Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. And then slide it down to the next person. She's like, what are you having on this? I'm like, I'll have some cheese and chicken and, you know, and I would just get so frazzled. I mean, it just... It would, like, I think my anxiety level would rise when I would go into a place like that. You want it to be calm, like a Panera Bread, you know?
Ugh, Panera Bread. You're just talking about, like, all the places I hate. Oh, I hate Panera Bread.
I'm not a fan. I will say I'm not a fan. I'm just saying the music, the bakery,
the fireplace. My biggest turnoff there is the music. No, I just hate their food. I hate their setup.
I'm not a fan.
Cups of chai I've ever had there.
I never get there. I used to go there and just do some work when I was unemployed. I'd use their free Wi-Fi and I would just get like a bottomless cup of coffee.
I would do work when I'm unemployed.
You know, I would sit there and just... return emails and...
You would do Clayton style work.
But yeah, we get like a bottomless cup of coffee. You know, they give you, you know, you sit there and you have free Wi-Fi and... It was nice, you know, but yeah, I'm not at the sandwiches. I always felt like a little rubbery, and the soups come out of like a bag. Like they're not even like fresh made soups, even though on the menu it says like fresh made soups or homemade soups. It's like they're not made here. They're not made in this building. They're like brought in like sealed bags and poured into this. So yeah, I'm not a terribly big fan of Panera. I'm just talking about the anxiety level is much lower at a Panera. At the fireplace.
I see.
The fresh baked baguettes. Well, although I have had one of their sort of like frozen coffee kind of Mike style drink there, and it was delicious. It was like a coffee chocolate chip, a chino or something. So there's like chocolate chips floating in the thing. Ooh, man, that was good. That was also back when I was 20 pounds heavier when I was living in Dayton, Ohio. But yeah, the reason I bring up the tipping thing, well, I mean, the other day we went to like a lunch. I had a bunch of family here in town for, you know, for my son's birthday, and so we went out to this place, great place, and you know, love to go there. It's right on the water in our town near in New Jersey, and really really nice. And they have this like Sunday or I think it was a Sunday sort of brunch thing. It's sort of like a buffet style, right? You can go up and get all sort of fresh food. You can get an omelet, you can get waffles, you can get eggs, you can get pasta, you can get whatever you're in the mood for, you know? And so everyone got the buffet at our table. And then the guy, you know, the guy just brings you like orange juice, right? Or your whatever drink. And even half the drinks you would get yourself, there was like a drink station. So unless you just wanted coffee or orange juice, you got the rest of it yourself. Now there was like it was like eight of us, and then the bill comes, and I'm paying the bill, and I look at it, and I see the gratuity included.
And is it like they upcharged 18%?
Yeah, 18% included. But I had like a crying baby, you know. I had to get out of there, and like I didn't, you know, I wasn't going to fight it, but I'm like thinking, you just brought us drinks. Now, what's the protocol? I mean, what would you do in that situation? It was already included. And everyone got the buffet, so we were serving ourselves.
Right. Is that one of those, I mean, was it stated somewhere that a group of a certain amount is going to be assessed that no matter what?
Well, I don't know that no matter what, but I think under normal circumstances at most restaurants, it's like a party of six or more, right? Like a party of six or more, typically the the gratuity is included. That's sort of standard protocol. And, you know, then that's fine. Because usually, you know, like I like to tip, like, you know, if it's good service, like 20% just makes it easy, you know, just sort of do a 20%, you're good, right? But they sort of always do a built-in 18. So kind of cuts you a little slack, right? If you don't feel like adding on anything extra, it's like, yeah, oh, it's already built in. Great, let's go, you know. So I don't know about that. But I think what it is, right, like their computer was probably set up just for like their normal meal service. So, you know, at dinner, if there was a party of six or more, 18% gratuity would be included automatically and be taken care of. Well, they don't like shift it around for this special meal that they do once a week on a Sunday. You know, they're not going to like update their software. But then I get screwed, right, because this massive tip is built in. I mean, I don't know what the protocol is. I just think that's an outrage.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you there. Like, I think any kind of buffet, a tip is, I mean, at most, everyone's thinking, you know, like you go to a Chinese buffet or something like that, and maybe they're really quick with the drink service and you throw a buck or two. All right.
Right.
But other than that,
yeah, I don't know what you do. I don't know what the protocol is.
Right. Where do you start that fight? Go right to the top.
There was an article just this week about how we've just come to accept all of this over tipping, or not over tipping, tipping for things that we wouldn't normally tip for. Mm-hmm. It's you know, like you go to like the coffee place and there's like a cup out there now, like for your Starbucks barista.
Yeah, I have never ever put anything in that cup ever.
No, neither of. I think maybe at the local coffee place next to the Starbucks, like the independent place, I have. Like they charge, this is what drives me nuts, right? They'll charge you like $1.95 for a medium cup of coffee. I don't want that nickel, right? Just charge me $2. Mm-hmm. Just charge me a flat $2 so I can pull out $2 in paper money if I happen to have it. Mm-hmm. I don't need that nickel. There's also Hudson News or something like that in Penn Station, and I stop there sometimes, and I'll get myself like a, you know, a bottled water or a, you know, Diet Coke or something like that, and it's always like $1.97. Oh no, it's worse. It's like $2.04. Really? So now I got to have 96 cents in my pocket.
That's which how they get you.
And I'm never gonna like convert that back to a dollar and put that in the bank. It's just gonna languish in a dish somewhere, isn't it? When are you ever going to use that?
I go to the Coinstar machine like every other month. So even though I'm losing 9 cents on the dollar, like I do recover enough. But that's it. You know, I think it's done that way because I'm not going to carry these coins around. Just throw it in your cup.
Right.
It's like you get a whole extra dollar out of me. Uh-uh.
Right. Like charge $2.01. So every time you get a cup of coffee, I'm throwing 99 cents in the cup so you get a tip, you know. The worst is the places like the Cold Stone Creamery or something where they've got the tip jar and you tip them and then – you know, and then they ring a bell and they do a dance. You ever go to one of those places?
they do a dance.
No, I think it's Cold Stone, where if you tip them, they sing.
They sing a song.
They sing something, right?
Yes, they do, but they don't sing a song. They sing a song. They don't do a dance. I do remember, incidentally, once again, referencing, I wish it hadn't gone away. It really was like one of my favorite places to eat at Lone Star. Like a couple times while you'd be there, they just all start doing like a country line dance.
Oh, my God. That's why I couldn't work there.
You're a terrible line dancer.
No, I had applied there, and then I found out they sort of asked me at the end of the interview, you know, I was applying to be a waiter, if I would mind doing, like, the line dance. You know, every hour the song plays. I don't remember what song it is. It's like, I Got Friends in Low Places or something. I don't know. It's a
pretty
famous.
Yeah, I think you're
and
right.
And you'd have to be involved in the line dance. Mm-hmm. No effing way. I would go hide. That's like when I worked at Olive Garden. Mm-hmm. Remember this? And That's Amore would come on once an hour, and we were all required to sing it. This is like this corporate BS that, you know, was like thought up in some office way up high, you know, and they're sort of getting together over lunch and like, I think that'd be great. In all of our restaurants, that song comes on once an hour. All the waiters and waitresses just start singing That's Amore. Make people feel like when they're here, they're family. Mm-hmm. You know, that's in keeping with our motto. Let's do that. So you're applying for the job. You're like, I'm going to get a job at Olive Garden. I'm going to make some good money. You know, it's probably pretty good tips. You know, average bill there probably in the $50 range. So I'll probably make, you know, $10 a table. Probably do pretty well for myself in college here. oh, by the way, you know, I know you're probably a good waiter, but there's something that we should ask you. It comes at the end of the interview. Do you mind singing That's Amore by Dean Martin every hour and a half when it comes on the loudspeaker? What? And then people just sort of say yes. And then they kind of get roped into doing it. Mm. And I used to notice there were a few waiters and waitresses at Olive Garden that would get out of it by talking to the customers. Mm-hmm. They would be at the table and they'd be, how's everything going here? You enjoying your pasta? Is there anything else I can get for you? They'd purposely like engage their customers in conversation so they could avoid having to sing. Me, mm-hmm. as the host, I was the host out front. I used to go hide in the bathroom.
Right. Good thinking.
I knew when it was coming on and I would sneak to the bathroom every time, like on the hour. Mm-hmm. People just must have thought I was like incontinent or something.
Right. That's a serious thing, Clayton, you know. There's prescription meds you can take for that. Yeah, I think, you know, when you think about all the crazy like restaurant gimmicks that there have been over the years, like that's certainly one of the strangest. But having said that, like the Lone Star really was like one of my very, very favorite places to eat. My pal Tyrus and I, for a long time, we had like a longstanding tradition where once a week we would go out and we would have dinner and kibitz there. And this is when I had a very expensive comic book habit. And like we would catch up on all the books that we had read during the last week, so on and so forth. And as expensive as my comic book habit was, it was probably like maybe $30 a week. His was $80.
Wow.
And I just thought, my God, like, I don't know how you can afford that. The answer is money. But
what an addiction.
I used to really, really enjoy going to Lone Star. It was like the best. I thought it was one of the best meals. And now they're all closed. Even there was one near the King of Prussia Mall that wasn't too far away. It's all, you know, the windows are all shut and the sign has been covered over with a tarp. They just slowly kind of went away.
Well, maybe they're still open. You know, that was sort of their motif anyway. Like it looked like a ghost town.
Maybe no, everyone that I knew of, there was the one in Reading that has since become like Aztec Mexican Grill. There was one up in the Lehigh Valley. I used to know exactly where that one was. There's one here by the King of Prussia Mall. All the Lone Stars that I know of are all closed now. And a distant second in my mind is Outback. But that is a distant second.
What's the difference? I mean, forgive my ignorance on the steak places, but what? I mean, I know Outback has like the Bloomin' Onion, which I every year they do that survey, like the unhealthiest thing you can buy at a restaurant, and you know what I'm talking about. And the Bloomin' Onion is always number one. Fried Bloomin' Onion.
I know that's right in your wheelhouse too. I don't know if that's because you cover that on Fox and Friends or whatever.
I think
but
I do, yeah,
I love. A year or two ago, you told me about this list of the unhealthiest things ever, and one of them you said, like in the report, it said like the Entenmann's donut.
Right.
You should never eat it ever. It wasn't even like one a year. It was like never, never, ever eat it. And I was like, I've eaten whole boxes of those.
Was it? I know, me too, man. I grew up on those things. Was it like trans fat was the issue or something? I don't even know what it was.
I don't remember. I just remember, you know, you were saying like, yeah, you know, this type of hot dog, you know, they say you could eat one a year. Like that's the level of moderation that is expected. And then you're like, but these Entenmann donuts, have you ever had one of those, Mike? And I was like, oh yeah, I'm eating one right now.
Right. You're like, yeah, it's fantastic. The one that has a little coffee crumbs on it. Fantastic.
Oh, that is the best one. And you're
those
like,
are good. And yeah, I would root around the bottom of the box for those little coffee nuggets, you know, like the little coffee crumb nuggets. I used to dig around in there.
Yeah, and as I was putting it down, you were just like, yeah, they recommend you never eat them ever.
Right. It's like cyanide. You know what's amazing about the Entenmann's donuts, right? Like if you got a fresh donut, like a Dunkin' Donuts or some other place, right? Like the next day, it's probably stale, right? If you went to eat it like the next day in the bag, it's going to be a little hard. But the Entenmann's donuts, they're kind of like barely sealed in that white box.
Come hard. By the time they get to you, they've already,
right. There's no freshness involved. Like, and I love at the bottom by that little nub that you have to rip open, the perforated edge where you rip it open.
Man, I never get that right. Right. I never get that right.
You'll get like a paper cut opening that thing.
Yeah, you do.
And you open it, but
it's like
a
diagonal cut, like you're going up some steps and you never rip it right. And then you got to go get like a tool to help you.
And you got
to
tape it shut. My dad used to get so frustrated. If a box couldn't be opened in one little quick swipe, the box would be ripped in half. And my mom would be pissed every week without fail because the donut box was always ripped in half and she'd have to like put them in a bag somewhere. But that I loved on that little nub, it said something like freshness seal. Right. If freshness seal has been tampered with, don't touch. Right. Well.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right. So there's already like air flowing through it because it's all it is. It's just that front little tab.
Right.
So if you kind of squeeze the other portion of the box, you could almost like reach up inside and snag a donut out of the box without even ripping that freshness tab open.
Yes. And if you've ever seen, you know how I don't know, there's probably an industry term for this, but you know at the grocery store when like some ne'er-do-well eats like part of a grocery and then puts the uneaten part like on the end cap, like they walk to the end of the aisle eating some tasty cakes and then discard what they didn't want, you know, they're just stealing food from the grocery chain. Whatever the industry term is for that, the Redners where I sometimes shop, I've even seen that with the Entenmann's. Like, someone knows. That's all you do, right? You squeeze the other end to make the opening for yourself, and you pull out what, I think I'd like one powdered donut.
Right, I'd like a Pop'em. I'm going to take one of these little Pop'ems.
Pop'ems. That's one of the most. Pop'ems is up there with Dilly Bar. It's one of the most annoying terms I've ever heard. Pop'ems. Munchkins. So, but yeah, I've seen that. Like, oh, yeah, somebody helped themselves to one powdered Pop'em. Here, you know, like
and the whole, and you don't know. It's hard to tell. Like unless you eat them so often, you have like a donut count, so you know, like you know how many donuts, how many Pop'ems should be in there. But the poor sap that gets home and you know that there's six normal sized donuts in one of those long boxes, and you get home and there's only five, and you like rip it up, and you're like, wait a second, why is there a donut missing? Oh, someone just snuck their hand in. They didn't even have to.
I've been victimized by a grocery ne'er-do-well.
Right. Pop the freshness seal, and they just went right in there. I guess I didn't notice the freshness seal here.
Having said this about how unhealthy everything Entenmann's is, and I bet you this is also true of another regional favorite of ours, Tasty Cake.
Oh, yeah.
And you know the Tasty Cake Corporation has really fallen on hard times. Like they've been on the verge of closing for 2 or 3 years now. And I think I even told you, like when I first heard that, I went right out to the grocery store and bought like boxes and boxes of Tasty Cake cupcakes because Tasty Cake should exist forever. Tasty Cakes makes the most delicious snack foods in the world. The idea that those might go away, the same, like if I ever heard like Hostess fruit pie was in danger, like I'd just go out, I'd buy a skid load. Like, Hostess pie should never go out of business, but
that would be like Drake's coffee cake. Like that's it, they're just you shouldn't ever lose the Drake's coffee cake. And with you know with Tasty Cake, you know there's of course the crumpet. That was my favorite growing up.
The crumpet. The crumpet. I was eating my curds and crumpet.
Now the crumpet is. Forgive me if I'm. It's like a vanilla cake with like a vanilla frosting on top.
Well, I believe the crimpet.
Crimpet. Butterscotch. They're like a butterscotch crimpet.
There's a vague butterscotch taste to the icing. Now, it's funny you bring that up. While the crimpet is good, it's actually like my least favorite.
Really?
Tasty cake. Yeah, that's not my favorite at all.
Are you racist?
Am I racist? I dislike the crimpet. I really like the cupcakes that they have with the frosting on top, and I really like the... its description is a peanut butter cake enrobed in chocolate.
Enrobed? And,
yes. And some people, because there was a local rival to this, sometimes call this the Tandy Cake.
Oh, candy cake with a K.
That's right. The Tandy Cake is the knockoff. So when people see the Tasty Cake candy cake and they're like, oh, are those Tandy Cakes? No. The Tandy Cake was like GoBots.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The real transformable robot connoisseurs know the difference between Transformers and GoBots, as I know the difference between Candy Cake and Tandy Cake. But there's something about them, and I think part of it has to do with, you know, where we grew up. Both Clayton and I grew up in Pennsylvania. Tasty Cake is very regionalized.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe the tri-state area and not much beyond. Would Tasty Cake be known to you? Although, I believe if you go to their website, they'll ship it to you anywhere in the world. And they do need your help. Despite the fact that I'm sure all the products made by Tasty Cake and all the products made by Entenmann's are like the unhealthiest things you could ever eat, if I was going away, you know, like they're like, you're going to be leaving for this deserted island for the rest of your life.
Or imprisoned.
Right. Like, you want to stock up? Like, yeah, I'm going to get those buttercream frosted cupcakes from Tasty Cake, as many as I can carry. I want that breakfast coffee cake, the crumb coffee cake from Entenmann's. Those donuts that are heavy like lead bricks, you know, the cake bottomed ones, like you said, that leave all the coffee crumb turds in the box. As many of them as I can carry. I don't have to worry about freshness with those, as we covered. You know they're already rock hard. That's what I'm taking.
Yeah, those will last a long time. So
if I could keep it hot, I'd take funnel cakes with me too. The thing is, once a funnel cake gets cold, I don't want that.
Right. Yeah, that's a problem. I'll give you mine in a minute. Let's pause here and thank one of our show sponsors this week. How about it? Why don't you tell us about our good friends over at Drobo, at Drobo.com, to back up your entire digital life. There's no one better, right?
That's right. And if you want to get in on this right now, they've got a bunch of new innovations that are about to hit. And if you want to get in on the Drobo Mini, you need to go pre-order yours now, because the volume of just general interest, including pre-orders for this, far exceeds anything else the former Data Robotics have ever produced. The Mini Drobo, or the Drobo Mini, it's portable. You can put your entire digital life, everything you've got, work files, personal files, everything you can think of, on this thing, unhook it, pick it up, and go. You can go to the next work site. You can go to somebody else's home. Do you know a grandparent that takes roughly 1 million photos of a child every chance that they get? You can imagine how many hard drives that would fill. Well, you load that thing up. You put terabyte-sized drives right in that thing. Fill it right up and take the Drobo Mini with you. And that's just one of many, many different things. I run right here, right next to my tower. I run the Drobo FS. And I know that I'm always safe, because in the event of drive failure, I know all my information is stored redundantly across all the drives inside the Drobo. Like, maybe short of, I don't know, like a bolt of lightning hitting the Drobo right on top. Right. I don't know how on earth I could ever lose all my stuff, right? And the odds of that, I want to say, are really, really small.
Right. Yeah, you don't live next to a lightning factory, you don't have like a Benjamin Franklin lightning rod going right to the Drobo, so you're probably safe. And
you know, I have a lot of pants with lightning on them.
But. Right. Recently, I've been getting more. I've always had an affinity for photography, as you know. When I first started out at the University of Pittsburgh, I was sort of going to cinematography school for film, and I've always loved it. I've just never been that great at it. I don't know that I've had the tools. And I've, over the past year, gotten more and more into it. And certainly with the kids, you take more and more photos as a result. And where do you store them? So I am going to be buying one of the Drobo Minis as soon as they are available. I cannot wait to get my hands on one of these. With all the back orders that have been going on, these things are in hot demand, as Mike was saying. And to be able to store all of my digital life on the Drobo Mini as I'm moving around so much, you know, you're traveling, you take like, I don't know, 500 photos of the family vacation, and you don't want to lose them. Or maybe you're a professional photographer, and you're tired of having to lug one of those big drives with you. You know, bring the Drobo Mini with you. Store all of your photos on that. It's durable. You never have to worry about it. It's portable, and it's redundant. So if one of the drives fails, as Mike said, you never have to worry about losing all of your digital data. So check them out at Drobo.com. And all of their new drives are just fantastic. These guys are leading the industry, and especially with their Thunderbolt ports now, so you can all of the data can move so quickly between your Thunderbolt Macintoshes and back and forth. So it's the perfect tool to get all your digital life backed up. We thank them for their support.
Yeah, we do.
And I was on the Tasty Cake website here. So can you just take a gander at how long ago you think the candy cake launched?
Launched? I don't know. Maybe in the 60s?
1931.
Wow.
1931 is the candy cake. It's a milk chocolate coated treat, are beloved for their vanilla sponge cake lined with peanut butter. Mm. Or their chocolate sponge cake lined with vanilla cream. But yeah, I always had those in the drawer, you know, in my parents' like snack drawer growing up. I think you always knew right where that was too. You'd go and raid them.
Yeah. Well, actually, not so much at my house, but at my grandparents' house, that was really, really common. And they kept them in the fridge. You know, those candy cakes were good, you know, just a little bit chilled. Not so much those cupcakes though. You want them at room temperature, I think. I didn't want the cake to be cold, but I really did like them.
If I was on a deserted island, I would love to have a crimpet with me. I'd love to have a box of crimpets. Those things are
just
delicious.
One. I'll take the whole box. I'm going to be here a while.
Now, if I could keep like good milk cold, for a long time. Like if I could have, you know, like one of those, like an ice chest with like a bottle of milk, like they used to deliver it on someone's front door. You know, if I had like a bottle of milk, like on ice. And I'm talking strictly desserts, right? Because we don't need to get into the foods we'd keep there. But I'm saying
I wouldn't. I mean, if I had all those tasty cakes.
That would be the thing you'd eat. But right. I would have to say I would love to have like double stuffed Oreos also. Mm. Be able to dip in some ice cold milk on a regular basis and some chocolate chip cookies. Mm. Maybe some like the soft batch. Well, I don't know. You know what's the place at the mall that you charges like $5 for a cookie?
I don't know. I'm not that big into cookies that I would do that. Maybe you're thinking of Annie Ann's. I mean, they also do pretzels there, but
right, like the place you get like the big cookie cake for your birthday, you know?
Oh, Mrs. Fields.
Mrs. Fields, yeah,
yeah.
Those cookies are good. Those cookies.
I have never had one. Those cookie cakes look so incredibly delicious. I've never had one of those.
At my birthday growing up, that was the cake I always wanted. My mom would say instead of getting like an actual big cake, you know, I always wanted a cookie cake, and I loved the icing on the cookie cake. So you'd slice it up into like a pizza style, mm-hmm. and you'd eat the giant cookie, and I loved it. So for years, that was the cake of choice at my birthday party. Mm. You'd know this if you were ever invited, but
right, yeah,
try to keep you out
that way.
Yeah,
I do remember there was one Clayton Morris birthday party where we were all shuttled to a movie theater to watch The Last Emperor.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Schindler's List, because I think we that was another birthday party. It was a little bit of a downer,
right? I was going to say, you know, the sequel they're making to that's a real downer.
Yeah, Last Emperor. That was one of my birthday parties, wasn't it?
Yeah, it sure was.
And that was the
I was
last.
Just baffled by that one.
No, last. Wait a minute. No, it was the Golden Child.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was the Eddie Murphy, the Golden Child. That was a terrible movie.
One of your birthday parties was a Police Academy movie.
I hope everyone was. I mean, every birthday party should be a Police Academy movie.
There are enough Police Academy movies to get us right up till about now.
Yeah. The Golden Child. That was such a terrible film. Maybe I should go on Rotten Tomatoes and look this thing up, because I think it's got like maybe a 5%. Right. It's one of those that's just so terrible. Eddie Murphy, I don't remember what the point of it was. You remember?
No, but I just remember, you know, this is my best friend's birthday party, and like halfway through, I'm thinking, I got to bail.
I got to get out of here.
I don't drive, and I'm like miles from home, but I got to bail. I was like, Vern Master, I'm going to the bathroom. If I'm not back in 6 hours, don't worry.
And now I see the Golden Child on your DVD shelf, so you come around.
I do. I have it on Blu-ray and digital copy.
26% on Rotten Tomatoes. Well, among the critical score. Yeah, Eddie Murphy followed up his Beverly Hills Cop success with this fantasy adventure that plops him right into the land of Ray Harryhausen and Indiana Jones. The plot revolves around a godlike youngster known as the Golden Child, who's been sent to Tibet to bring the gift of compassion to humanity. But the devil isn't idle, sending his emissary, Sardo Numpspa, to kidnap the Golden Child. Sardo absconds with the child and takes off to Los Angeles, where Eddie Murphy deals with him. I mean, if Eddie Murphy is thinking, like, you know, we had such a huge success with Beverly Hills Cop, like, and he's reading this description, how does he think that this is a winner for him?
I don't know.
I do remember one joke from that movie, and I used to say it a lot. Like, it was the only funny line, and it was like, I don't know, the guy says something about a knife. He's like, give me the knife. And then Eddie Murphy just, like, mocks him back. And I remember it being in the trailer. He goes, give me the knife. And I remember, like, as a kid laughing, you know, I thought that was, like, the funniest line. And I think that was the line they used in, like, the trailer, and it wasn't funny.
It may have been the funniest line in the movie. That may be true.
Total Recall. You going to go see that?
No, but, you know, it did not do very well at the box office.
Yeah, 30% right now on Rotten Tomatoes. And people are saying certainly not as good as the first one. Mm-hmm. Paul Verhoeven.
Or the original, I think.
What did I say? Oh, yeah. Yeah,
the original. It's not a sequel. It's a reboot, basically, or a remake, I guess, is the right term to use for that. But as interesting as the trailer looked, like, Total Recall has just never interested me. I didn't see the original. I won't see this one either.
Someone was saying that if you haven't seen the original in a long time and you ended up actually watching it now, it looks like, because the technology is so dated, it just looks like a gritty cop show, like a gritty cop movie. Like, it doesn't
it's
even
not look futuristic at all.
No, it just looks like sort of, you know, apocalyptic cop movie. It doesn't even look like it's that futuristic, you know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That was always true of The Rocketeer. You know, during the last week or so, everyone's thinking Clayton forwards me these articles and things like that, and he sent me a podcast to listen to. And I know a little bit about that because I make podcasts. And he sent me one called, like, The Mac Power User Hour with Shazam or something like that.
Right.
And the podcast was 71 minutes long. I listened to 40 minutes of this 71-minute podcast. And at that time, I had the, you know, whatever, I got up to get something to drink or I broke from it for a moment. And as I was evaluating where I was in the show and deciding that I was not going to listen anymore, I realized I've understood about 5% of what these people have said. And they speak English.
Right. Right. So but, it's not like the guy at Qdoba.
Right. Like, I comprehended so little of what they were talking about. Like, there were certain lines that made perfect sense. Like, the mail host, for example, said at one point, he's like, oh, you know, sometimes I get email. And I'm like, hey, I get email too.
Right.
I could relate to that. But most of the other stuff, it was Greek. It was all Greek to me.
Well, the Mac Power User, I'm actually going to be a guest on their show at the beginning of September on one of their Workflows show. Once a month, they have sort of a featured guest on there to talk about the way in which, you know, those folks use their computers, their digital life for their job. You know, they have like, I think they had an engineer on a few weeks ago, they had a photographer, you know, on a few weeks ago, whatever. So I'm going to be on there. I'm talking about something new that I've been working on for quite a while. And it's, you know, for the iPad that's going to be out. So I'm excited about that. But some other things. But yeah, these guys are super nerds. I mean,
and Clayton means that in the pejorative.
No. I mean, David and Katie, the host of the show, I listen every week. Some of the stuff, and I would say, you know, I use computers. I use a PC. I use a Mac. I jump back and forth quite often between the two of them. And I would say I probably use maybe, you know, I don't know what I said to you. I think like 20 to 30% of my computer. There are so many tools and things on my computer that I probably just never touch or are unaware of what they do.
Yes.
These guys know what they do. And so when I listen, like, I'm constantly learning crazy stuff from them, like setting up all sorts of email filters. I mean, it's changed my life. Like, I set up some email filters like the other week because I will open my inbox, and because I'm on so many lists for work, I will get like 200 to 300 emails a day. Now, I don't know about you, but that becomes an enormous chore. And I dread opening my inbox.
Wow.
David actually has a book coming out on email, and he's sort of a master of like setting up filters and how to, you know, set up filters, whether you're using Outlook or whether you're using mail app on your Macintosh or whatever. So, you know, you set up filters so that if it says this in the title subject line, it goes to this folder. If it's from this individual, it goes to the trash. Like, that's how I set it up for you. Any emails I get from you get put right in the trash bin.
This explains why you haven't responded to any of my forwards about pills from a Canadian pharmacy.
I just send you the Viagra pills. They're cheaper. I mean, you can get them cheaper that way.
I get one of those a day. Pills from Canadian pharmacy. Or what kind of pills do you think I need?
Well,
how did you find me?
You ever look at your? I mean, you ever look at some of the junk mail you get? You ever wonder, like, how do we get on these lists?
I think what it must be is that I get put on them as a joke by someone, because there's one that I get that is relevant to like equestrian pursuits. And it's
you finally got that one, huh?
Right. It's called like horselovers.com or something. And it's just like the new, you know, whatever saddle has rolled out or like, but like I get these horse related spam emails. Somebody really is having a good time at my expense here.
And you get a chuckle every time you open that one too.
Right. Oh, I read them all, because you can never delete an email without reading it. You know what I mean?
Right.
You got to read at it. And I just think, oh God, this saddle sounds great. I wish I had a horse.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. So these guys, the reason I sent that to you is not to make your head explode, but I thought, you know, there's a thing called like Yahoo Pipes, which has been around since like, I don't know, 2006 or something. I'd be curious how many of our audience members use it or not. But that, and there's a website called If This Then That,
right,
which is quite popular now. And
the kids are calling that IFT.
IFT, yeah. And, you know, you can set up all sorts of conditions. So, you know, if I receive an email from Mike, text me. And you think, wow, that's crazy. You can't do that. Sure. you can set up so that I get a text message sent right to my phone if Mike sends me an email. You know, you could set up conditions so that certain number of like really important individuals in your life who, as soon as you get an email from that person, you need to know about it immediately.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. To use Yahoo Pipes, this is something that I kept coming back to because they talked about Yahoo Pipes quite a bit on this podcast. Do you have to use Yahoo's email?
No.
To be able to use Yahoo Pipes.
No, but you know, with Yahoo services, you just sign in with like, and you sort of like, you know, Google, where you get like your Yahoo ID. So you would just sign up, and then you can, you know, you can certainly use Yahoo's email if you want. But then you have that Yahoo ID you can use across all of their services, Flickr, their IM client, their Messenger client, their financial page. So if you've got like stocks that you watch, that sort of stuff, and then also like Yahoo Pipes.
I see.
So, you know, you can plug in all sorts of conditions on Yahoo Pipes and create different things. You know, like, and his one of his good examples is like if you read like a lot of blogs or certain blogs and you want to get only certain information, like superhero information, you only want to hear about Batman news. Right. You know, you can set up that only send me, only send me it to my Google Reader, or only send this to my RSS feed, Batman related news or Chikara related news. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Or if, you know, Grizzly Productions, maybe you listen to, you know, three of our shows, but you only want to know about when the new trending show publishes or when Grizzly Beret Cafe publishes, but you're not interested in, you know, sports or the autism show, you can set up conditions so you get that information only. So I just think we're listening on information overload lately. So I've been like looking at sort of creative ways about stripping all this extra, you know, this sort of extraneous information that I get sent to my inbox on a regular basis, whether it's email or... You know, we're sort of on news overload, you know?
Mm-hmm. It does seem, if you have the wherewithal to get over the learning curve of it, that it could be very useful to you.
Right.
But most of it was over my head. And I just kind of felt like I was like, I got about 30 more minutes of this. Like, do I think, well, like, my comprehension level will at least get to 10%? Probably not.
Mm-hmm.
Probably not. And I really dislike the female host's voice.
They're
if you want, use that as an icebreaker when you're on that. do you know my technologically inept co-host from the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe? Katie?
Yeah, do you know this guy?
Mm-hmm. Just call her Pink the whole time that you're on that podcast and wait for her to wise up. But I appreciate you sending that because, you know, there are lots of things out there like that that can sort of simplify what you do. And I think maybe if I... made use of more apps or things like that, or was a little more savvy in that regard, that IFT, you know, the whole if this then that thing represents a really fascinating idea. You know, like Clayton said, you know, if you were waiting for a specific document, let's say, and the host of the podcast brought this up, he's an attorney, that he was waiting for a response from another attorney's office, and he could set it up so if that email hit his inbox, it would call him on his phone and tell him.
Right.
Which is, you know, that sounds like that could be very useful in certain instances. So... if you haven't discovered that yet, where is that? Like, where does that live, if this, then that?
It's ifttt.com, and I'm on there right now looking at their channels. And so they have, you know, partners that they've set up. So there's like 50 different channels. So,
and what do you mean by channels?
So like Craigslist is a channel. Okay. So you could monitor Craigslist. Let's say you were looking for a crib for your newborn, right? And you're like looking for a deal in your local town. So you could set up a Craigslist if this then that for, you know, someone puts up a crib on Craigslist for sale. And you could set up a channel so that you could be notified via text message the moment someone puts up a crib for sale on Craigslist and it'll text you, you know, and you can jump right to the listing and call that person. Or you could... You know, maybe you're looking for some rare comic books on Craigslist and, you know, you set up an if this then that alert so that if something happens on Craigslist, you get it, you know?
Yep.
Or that masseuse that you've been hoping that will pop up on Craigslist. you know, you can look for that too.
I recently had a massage.
You did?
Yeah. I'll tell you about this right now. I got a gift card for Father's Day. To go and get a massage, and I have to be honest. I know what my son's allowance is. I don't know how he pulled this off, but I took advantage of the gift card as opposed to allowing it to expire or whatever.
Came out of his college fund, so
it did unknowingly. He's in for an awkward surprise in about 15 years. So I went, and you know, this is not the first massage I've ever had, but this was definitely the oiliest massage I've ever had. Like, somehow, whatever the initial oil down was, that was not enough. And the masseuse was like, yeah, I think this dude's going to need a couple more layers of oil on him. And it was like in the middle of the afternoon. So I was there, you know, like 1 to 2 o'clock, give or take. Yeah. And then so I came out, and my car had been in their parking lot, of course. That's where I put it, as opposed to a private garage. And it had been baking in the sun. It's been extraordinarily hot in this part of the country. And I felt dirty because I felt like I was just covered in oil. You know, like on the one hand, it was very relaxing, of course. But on the other hand, I was like, I'm so covered in oil.
Well, and you're a hairy guy, too. So
true. So and then I sat in my car, which was like climbing into an oven. And upon, you know, sitting back against the seat, my shirt became saturated with the oil, like as if it was painted onto me. Like, you know, I'm not the guy that wears like very form fitting stuff because I have no form for it to conform to.
You, right? You wear sateen shirts, like you live on South Beach, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. You know, I want that painted on look. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I buy two sizes too small so that, you know, my jacked physique comes ripping out. Like as if I'm in mid Lou Ferrigno transformation or something, and like I almost had to like, not almost like I was peeling my shirt off when I got home. I was like, I gotta get in the shower here. Like I was like, get me a spatula. I gotta scrape this off my back. It was too oily. That's what I'm saying.
So you were like Kramer in that episode of Seinfeld where he was baking with the butter. Yeah. Newman was eyeing him up. Like he was a roast turkey. Yeah, you know, the thing is, typically at those massage places, they you know, they give you like a wet towel to sort of rub you down after the oil. So they wipe the oil kind of right. off you. The only yeah. problem I have is that, and you put your socks back on. It feels like your foot's going to slide right out of your shoe. You know, you can't.
Yeah.
You put your, you know, put your sock on. You're like, ugh, foot's all oily now. I got to go home and shower. Mm-hmm. That's one of those things. It's not a guilty pleasure, but it's one of those things. I love getting a massage because it's the
well, sure, yes.
God, my, you know, my neck and back. If I could do that like once a week, I would. And you know, there was a time when it was built into my insurance plan years ago when I lived in Florida. So on a Friday, it was built. They had a masseuse like at the chiropractor's office, and so it was sort of built into my plan. So every Friday, I would go to get my bad back worked on.
Your bad back, his good back, he keeps in storage,
right? I would pull that out once a week and get that worked on, and then and you know, bring my good back out for the weekend.
Right, yeah, I'm going to a party. I need my good back.
But I loved it. Every Friday was the way to end my work week, and I'd get a massage for an hour. And I'd always, you know, inevitably fall asleep on the table.
Mm, so you really benefit from the experience.
Well, I used to wonder, like, is that offensive for the masseuse, right? And I fall asleep.
I think
they
just stop.
Right, they walk away.
Right, they watch you.
They set up a little if this then that channel so that if I wake up, it pings them. Mm-hmm. Like on there, they get a text message like Clayton just woke up. Run back in there, pretend like you were still going. You know,
yeah. No, thing. I would wager to say that happens really, really frequently that people fall asleep. It can be very relaxing. I often think about this because I always have, you know, very whatever would be the most awkward interactions with people. That's usually exactly what I have. But I've not yet had this, but I bet that this happens a lot. Like, and I guess it would probably happen with like older dudes. Where they're getting a massage and they're so relaxed that they just pass gas.
I think it probably happens there, but I think it happens a lot more in yoga.
In yoga?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're doing different poses. You know, like my wife is a yoga instructor. Sure, there were times where, like in classes, where you'd have people doing all sorts of different poses and, you know, gas would just shoot out.
Right. Yeah. You know, the average velocity of one of those is 7 miles an hour. That was a news story. That was published yesterday. I mean, 7 miles an hour is roughly the velocity.
Can I subscribe to the news feed that you read? Because this is the sort of stuff I need to know about.
I get all my news from Rumor and Small Children.
I would think that that's the case. I would think that during a massage that would happen.
Right. And then, like, man, how do you...
Because there's nowhere to cover it up, right? Like,
right. It's just you're in this quiet room with, like, Yanni... playing in the background, right? Like this candlelit room with the new agey music going on. And, right, you just let it rip. You know, there's no... And what do you say in that moment? That's what I was thinking about the whole time. Like, what would you say in that moment? If, you know, it's so peaceful in the new agey sounds of nature, Native American flute music, number one on Clayton's iTunes, is playing in the background, and you're just like, brah, man, you just let... you know, have you ever heard the expression, by the way, for that passing guess, is a Bronx cheer? Have you ever heard that?
Man, the Bronx has to be happy about that.
You know, on the original whoopee cushions, that's what it said. It said, give them a Bronx cheer. And it's like a picture of a little kid sitting on the whoopee cushion. Give them a Bronx cheer. Like, what do you say in that moment? You know, like, I can't even begin to guess.
I'd say, you know what I'd say if I was getting a rub down at that moment and that happened and the Yanni music was playing? I just would say, I wonder what that Linda Evans is doing now. So it's
that'd be it.
Because you know, just to deflect, you know, just go right to the Yanni music.
I'm gonna put that in my back pocket. You know, sometimes you have a joke locked and loaded, waiting for the right opportunity to let it out, like your Linda Evans line there. I'm gonna Qdoba it up big time with the pinto beans before my next massage, and I'll lock and load the Linda Evans remark, and I'll just wait for it. I'll even do the squirm. I'll do that little squirm. You know how you know you got to get it out. I'll give him the squirm. Like, here it comes. I got one for you. I got one locked in both ways. I got one locked and loaded for you.
See if that goes over like a fart in a massage parlor.
I always love to. That's a really common expression in wrestling. You know that got over like a fart in church. And I always love when there's somebody new to the business that's never heard that expression before. Like, the first time you really unload that on them, and it dawns on them what you're saying, they're like, oh, that's not a compliment.
Right, that's not good at all. Either that or maybe, hey, yeah, that was pretty good. I got away with that. No one heard it. Right. You know, the worst is because, you know, a fart in church, obviously, it reverberates because the pews are wood, right, very often. Right. So, you know, it's loud. Right. It's very difficult to hide that, you know. The worst is, though, or maybe the best, is when you're like at a Denny's or someplace where you've got like the vinyl booth chairs.
I know what you're getting at.
You know, it's always hard because you know, especially if, like, you'll do the lean over.
Right.
You do the lean to the side.
You're one of those, are you? Because that draws attention to you, right? You pull the Leaning Tower of Pisa, like, everybody knows what you're up to there.
I think it'd be worse for a woman, but for a guy, it can almost look like, hey, I'm going for the wallet, right? I'm going for the bill.
Right.
And you kind of wait till the bill comes, and then you sort of lean over. Oh, you know what? I forgot. I don't keep my wallet in my back pocket.
Right. Now you get scoliosis.
Right. And, hey, I want to thank all the many thousands of new listeners we have, thanks to iTunes doing a nice promotion for us last week. So thank you. And this is the kind of great content you can come to expect.
That's right. Yeah, boy, is this characteristic. This is the longest flatulence discussion we've ever had here on the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. It's fun for the whole family.
Right. I think it is, too.
Right, kids. Are you embarrassed yet playing this for your mom? Who was like, tell me what podcasts are.
I've listened to a podcast I've been meaning to listen to a podcast for the first time. And God help you if this Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe was the first one you tested out.
I heard a woman say this yesterday to my astonishment. I was talking to a coworker, I guess, about, you know, internet options to have her house wired for the internet or whatever. And she's like, yeah, I guess I've really got to get one of those internets in my house. And just the way she phrased it, it was like all I could do to keep from laughing in that moment.
The internets. It's like Ted Stevens, Senator Ted Stevens from Alaska, who passed away in, a plane crash not too long ago, but famously called the internet a set of pipes. He was on the floor of the Senate explaining that the internet moved through a series of pipes.
Yeah. So is that not true?
So a pipe gets clogged and, you know, you're going to have some problems with that. That's when you got to call Cobra.
Yep, the leaders of our nation, there they are, telling you about the internet. Yeah,
that's right.
Call Cobra. You could call them for anything. They may not always answer. They're busy over at Cobra because they're always making up stuff to make your life easier, Clayton.
That's right. Our show sponsor, Cobra Electronics, this week. We want to thank them for their support of the show. Mike is a big fan because he does a lot of traveling. So he's got the Cobra Eye radar built into the car, right? And you've got it plugged into your smartphone. And how does that thing work? Because you have many more road adventures than I have.
Mm-hmm. Misadventures might be more appropriate, but yes. Right. Yes, I do. Through Bluetooth, it just pairs with your smartphone, there's a dashboard functionality right there on your smartphone then so that you can customize the Cobra Eye radar experience to tell you exactly what you want to know. If you want to know about all the different types of radar detection, so if you're being clocked, you're aware of it. If you want to know about intersections with red light cameras, if you want to know any kind of driving hazard you can possibly think of, You can get all those alerts, none of those alerts, exactly the alerts that you want as you're driving. And I guarantee you it makes you a safer and more alert driver, because we're all guilty at times, whether it's because, you know, we're tired or our favorite song's on, or we just kind of we're on autopilot as we're driving a path that maybe you commute the exact same way to work every single day. And it's rote memorization, right? You're not really consciously thinking about everything that's out there. Having a device like this in your car definitely makes you a safer and more alert driver, because you are suddenly being constantly informed, and you crank the volume up and it's like somebody yelling at you, of all the driving hazards around you. And it's especially great if you're driving late at night and you're driving by yourself, because it's like having somebody else in the car to yell at you and keep you awake.
Which is great. Yeah, that's how you stay awake.
You might think that Cobra is like a serpent distributor, and they're not. They're an electronics company. And the iRadar is just one of many, many innovations of theirs. They're at the forefront of GPS and marine navigation. CB radios they do a lot of. And I'm not sure if this is still going on. This is for a very small period of time. But a great gift idea of theirs, the Cobra Tag System, which is a two-way locator so that you never misplace your keys. You attach the fob to your keys. And whatever you want to protect, you protect your laptop bag, you protect your briefcase, whatever that other object is, it's a two-way locator, so if you ever misplace one, you can find the other. And if worst came to worst, you could even, using the app on your smartphone, have it draw you a map to where your misplaced item is. This ingenious innovation, the Cobra Tag, I'm not sure if it's still going on. You're going to have to go over to their website and check. In the specials section of their website, that is buy one, get one free, and that is for a very limited time. So make sure you check that out, because it's great, great savings on an awesome, awesome invention from our friends and great show sponsors, Cobra Electronics.
Indeed. Just posting over on our we got a Facebook page. It's very, very popular. Grizzly Bear Cafe Facebook page. And just posting up that question, what dessert would you take with you to a barren island? So you don't want to put deserted island, because then it will look like, well, is it a dessert island?
My God, if I could go to an island of desserts.
Can you imagine?
I would never come back.
Like gumdrop. What dessert would you take with you to a barren island? We'll talk about it. Chris writes us. Chris, forgive me for not pronouncing your last name correctly. Schwalje?
Smith.
No, S-C-H-W-A-L-J-E. Mm. Chris writes this week to us, excellent review of the new Batman on this week's Grizz. I bet the trilogy will eventually be re-released in theaters for marathon showings, the same way Lord of the Rings was. And Nolan's consistency in creating the film's world would be even more apparent. And admirable. Thanks, Chris, for writing. And Richard Davies wants to know, does anyone know if the Hank Pym in the Ant-Man film will be the geeky one from the Earth's Mightiest Heroes or the dark version from the books? What do you think?
Well, I would hope it would not be the Earth's Mightiest Heroes version. But on the other hand, like, I don't know. Like, I always sort of disliked that when they darkened up Pym. They managed to go 200 issues of the Avengers before they had to go down that path.
And the Avengers film is not dark in that way, so it might not be in keeping with the film's motif if they went down that path, right?
Well, the other thing to keep in mind is there are clearly overt references to the Ultimates version of the Avengers. I mean, the way Hawkeye's dressed, Thor's look, the fact that Nick Fury, who's drawn to look like Samuel L. Jackson in the books, was played by Samuel L. Jackson. And in the Ultimates, it is that darker Hank Pym. So I don't know. Like, maybe for the sake of throwing some dirt on one of the heroes and maybe trying to make them seem grittier and more realistic, that's what we're going to end up with. But I would hope not. Incidentally, as it relates to that, we do talk superhero stuff quite a bit here on The Grizz. Jeremy Renner has said there's been no discussion about a Hawkeye solo film at this point. Although they have talked about doing a Black Widow film, I think probably just because they want to splash Scarlett Johansson out there any way they can. And you may have been aware that Disney had entered into negotiations to reacquire the Fantastic Four and Daredevil licenses from Fox. They are trying to bring them back under the giant Marvel umbrella, and Fox is disinterested in this. They said they're going to hang on to them.
I met Jessica Alba last week.
You did.
Yeah, and she's doing some
Does she store her good back at the same locker where yours is?
She does. She brought her bad back out, but she's not involved in any sort of Fantastic Four talk right now. She's going to be doing like the sequel to Sin City.
That's right. Mickey Rourke's doing that too.
Yeah, Michael Madsen as well. But so she's going to be doing that, but she's not involved in any sort of Fantastic Four stuff that I could get out of her, from what I can tell.
And where did you bump into her?
She was at work. She was at work with me. She came by to see me. She just wanted to see how I was doing. So
I was unemployed doing some work at Panera Bread.
Right.
And there was Jessica Alba.
There she was. We enjoyed ourselves a little crimpet together.
A crumpet.
I gave her half of my crumpet.
And half of my curds and whey.
So what else is going on? Because Thor, you saw some of the Thor news. Tom Hiddleston, mm-hmm. who plays Loki, says that the Alan Taylor, who's the director for the sequel of Thor, apparently Tom Hiddleston says his vision for the sequel is utterly brilliant, which I'm excited about. So, right. And also, Dark Knight Rises, I guess, has made, whatever, $300 million or more.
And that's just domestic. It's done almost an additional $400 million internationally. Yeah, it's doing very, very well. And it, even though it saw a massive drop-off in week two, you know, it dropped off 61%. In week two, which is a huge hit.
Yeah.
It still won the box office for the third straight weekend, and it crushed Total Recall and whatever else. I mean, it's just crushing everything. I'm not surprised, based on how they've marketed it, that it has really positive word of mouth, because they definitely wanted to lead you to think it was going to be one thing based on the trailers and the commercials that were out there. And then, of course, as you've heard us discuss here on The Grizz, it does resolve itself in a very satisfying way, I think. So people leave the theater feeling really good about the experience. And, of course, you know, you want to tell other people about that.
We went and saw it a third time. Or mm-hmm. I saw it a third time the other night. My wife.
Yeah. There's no shame in going to the theater by yourself. We are of that age where that's no longer a thing.
She said, my wife said, she said, you know, I want to go see Batman again. I said, yes, mm-hmm. yes, you do. And so we went, I'd seen it three times. She had seen it once before, and we went and saw it again. It made me want to go out and buy the Hans Zimmer soundtrack.
Sure.
And, you know, so I was listening to a few tracks on iTunes, and to hear it, of course, without the dialogue. And I think you and I had that 1989 Danny Elfman soundtrack. Did you ever have the Batman Returns soundtrack?
No. Of those original ones, I had the 89 Batman score by Elfman, and I had the Batman Forever soundtrack, not the score, that has, like, Kiss from a Rose by Seal, and it's got a Smashing Pumpkins song and a Flaming Lips song.
Yeah. So I want to pick up the Hans Zimmer score. It just sounds so amazing.
It's a shame for The Dark Knight Rises because, I mean, you know, Hans Zimmer's score stands on its own. It's an excellent piece of music, but it's a shame they didn't get Prince to squawk over a couple leftover tracks from an unreleased album and release that. You know?
What was that one where he's walking down at the very beginning and there's like the food cart that goes by?
Right.
In the future.
Party Man! Or what? Future Man.
In the future, babe, to be. Like just like this random like Prince voice carrying out through the movie.
Right, yeah, and you know, in that scene where they're in the hot air balloon or whatever, and Trust is playing, and you know, it was a novelty at the time when it was on radio, Bat Dance,
right?
And I think to us it was cool because there was a song on mainstream radio that was about Batman, but even like a day later, if you go back and listen to Bat Dance, that is awful. Uh-huh. That song is absolutely awful.
What's amazing is that Prince agreed to it. Maybe he just had such an affinity for what's his name.
Burton.
Tim Burton. And you know, a real superhero film at the time hadn't been, you know, we hadn't really seen that since like the Superman films. So maybe this was like a real opportunity. He was into it. He liked the dark side of Batman. Maybe he was going to get involved in it. But yeah,
but apparently, you know, the talk about that soundtrack album, and it's only 9 songs, right, that Prince album, is that these were all tracks that he had cut off of other albums that were just laying around. And then like he repurposed one as Bat Dance. But these songs were not written for the Batman movie. They were like cast-offs from other Prince projects. So, like, it was kind of like, hey, Prince, what are you doing with these extra tracks of yours? Put them in Batman. You know, Prince, have you ever seen, incidentally, that I think it's called An Evening with Kevin Smith, where it's just like him talking about all the projects that he's involved in? I don't know why I watched this. Like, just 2 hours of him, like, at a college talking. But he talks about when he worked with Prince. He talks about everything. He talks about when he was working on the Superman reboot. He talks about when he wrote Green Arrow. Like he talks about all that stuff. But he also talks about he was producing a documentary for Prince and how he got to know Prince and like was learning to work with him. Have you ever heard any of this?
No. I haven't.
And he said, like, you know, he said this characterizes Prince best of all. You know, he lives in Minnesota, and he's the kind of guy who will wake up at 3 in the middle of the night, you know, ask for his assistant and say, I need you to go out and find me a camel. I need to ride one right now. And they live, like, on a huge, you know, 200-acre estate in the middle of Minnesota, and the assistant's job at 3 a.m. is, like, we got to find a camel for Prince. In addition to which, and this is a little bit better known about Prince, that he apparently keeps a vast vault of tons of finished albums of his that he'll just never release to the world.
Yeah.
Like he dislikes them for some reason. And for he's quite prolific, as is, but he has a vast vault of unreleased stuff. And like he sometimes makes it available, I guess, to his fan club.
Yeah, I was just about to say, you know, my buddy Eric, who is a huge, 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 huge Prince fan. I think he knows, you know, owns everything Prince has ever done. He knows just about everything there is to know about Prince. You know, he idolizes Prince. He also has a thing for Sheila E., of course, Prince's drummer.
Kind of his protege, sort of developed her whole career for.
Yeah. So I know that the vault thing where he's got all this unreleased stuff, and he'll just kind of walk into the vault some nights and just grab like random tracks and throw them up on the fan club page just for his fan club folks. Mm-hmm. You know, just like random tracks, you know, and he'll release like full albums just to his fan club. No one will ever see they'll never be out for anyone else to pick up. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah. I like Sheila E.'s song. She had like two, maybe there's more, but I only remember her really having two hits in the 80s. Love Bizarre
right.
was one of them, and Glamorous Life.
Yeah, Glamorous Life is that her famous one? I think
I don't know. Maybe if Wiki or iTunes are up, it'll show you the popularity. Those are the only two songs of hers I could tell you off the top of my head. But I like Sheila E. You know, she went around with Ringo Starr and his All-Star Band at the same time that Paul Carrack and Colin Hay were in the group, which was kind of like an 80s like super group, right? Paul Carrack, Colin Hay from Men at Work, and Sheila E. Like, oh, they actually did come around. They came not far from here. They came to the State Theater in Easton when that was the lineup. And as I think you've probably heard me lament here on The Grizz in the past, Paul Carrack, who's one of my very favorite artists, never comes to the United States. He just doesn't. He tours England and Germany over and over and over again, never comes to the U.S. But he did as part of Ringo Starr's All-Star Band a couple years ago, and I thought, I'm going. Even though, you know how that works with his All-Star Band, right? Like, each of them gets to play one or two of their own hits.
Right.
But they mostly play, like, Ringo stuff and Beatles stuff. The bottom-priced ticket was $107.
Wow.
There was nothing cheaper in the Easton State Theater. And I thought, I'm not paying that because I knew I'd get two Paul Carrack songs at most. And I was like, I can't believe that. I don't know. And then like the next tour, he wasn't even on it. But, then I was on the mailing list. So I got the update about Ringo Starr and his All-Star Band. And it wasn't as if the prices had come down any. Like they were exorbitantly high again. And I don't know. Ringo is my least favorite Beatle.
Right. Right. I mean, that's the rub, the whole thing, you know. There's only two left, so what are you going to do? I would like to see.
He gets credit for being alive, but of the four, he's still my least favorite.
That's true. I would like to see Paul McCartney play. I would like to see him.
I would like to go see Paul McCartney before he croaks.
Interestingly, you know, here's a little bit of trivia. I don't know if you know this, but I played like a little, celebrity softball thing.
You do?
I did play in a celebrity softball game.
But now that your celebrity status is down.
Right. I no longer do that. But
they replaced you with Sheila E.
She and I played on the same team together. Sheila. Did I ever tell you this? This is no joke. In Florida, I was on the same team as Sheila E.
Tremendous.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. And
You were in a B movie with Amber Smith. You've really done it all.
That is true. But no, this is no joke. And I, you know, my buddy Eric was such a huge Sheila E. fan. And, you know, the reason, you know, he's a drummer, my friend Eric, and he got into drumming as a result of Sheila E. And he loves Prince. Mm. So we were in the dugout for the game at this like AAA stadium down in outside of Orlando near Cape Canaveral. And I said, would you mind if I got him on the phone? Would you talk to him for a minute? She's like, of course. And she was incredibly gracious. He couldn't believe it. He's like, get out of here. I'm like, I'm going to put something on the phone for you. And you're not going to believe who this is. And he's like, get out of here. And he just about died. You know, he couldn't believe it.
Hey, let me tie drumming and Batman together for you. Did you know that briefly when they were in pre-production or getting ready to get to work on Batman Forever, that on the short list of people being considered to play the Riddler was Mickey Dolenz?
No.
Yeah. Also, I saw the Monkees at the Easton State Theater. So that all really ties this whole segment together. I was watching an interview with Mickey Dolenz because he has a new album coming out in September. And it's all covers, including he's like remade some of his Monkees songs. And they've released like the remake of Randy Scow's Git. And I was listening to what was out there so far of it. Like, he covers a Beatles song. He covers a couple, you know, he remakes a few Monkees songs. And I thought this of his last solo album, which I haven't bought, but I've listened to like all the samples that are out there. It is surprisingly good. Hmm. And I've always thought Mickey had a really good voice. But, you know, he's up there in years. A lot of the stuff he does these days, you know what I mean? He's the guy that you see like at the Dorney Park Amphitheater.
Right.
Like, that's where Mickey's playing these days.
He's got a tip jar.
Right. The sad truth is, I have more followers on Twitter than does Mickey Dolenz. Like, that's the sad reality of it. But I was watching this interview with him, and he brought that up, that he was early on, he was in the running to be the Riddler in Batman Forever. And I thought, I never remember hearing that.
That's like, crazy.
What a strange...
Also, I don't know if you heard this, but apparently in the interviews, I was reading this after The Dark Knight Rises came out, that apparently Christopher Nolan was being pressured by the studio
yes.
to choose the Riddler as his
yes.
villain.
Absolutely.
Shot him down.
Mm-hmm. I remember that from the early going, that Warner Brothers came out without consulting Christopher Nolan, and, you know, he wrangled creative control and, like, the final say on all those points from them early on in this whole,
right.
in his Batman franchise. And Warner Brothers came out and said that we favor the Riddler, and Christopher Nolan was basically like, well, it's not really their choice, is it?
Right. And it's great. I mean, seeing it a third time, I just, every time that Bane comes on the screen, I just got excited. You know, so enjoyable. Mm-hmm. And you're right. I mean, talk about what an incredible acting job he does with his eyes, Tom Hardy.
Right.
What an incredible job. And we were looking through his IMDb history, and, you know, he was in like Black Hawk Down. He was in some film. I just couldn't remember. Apparently, he had like a history of drug abuse and all sorts of stuff in his childhood. He had a really rough childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Did Tom Hardy? But boy, I want to go back and watch Inception now that I've seen Dark Knight, just to see the differences there. But I find myself doing the lines from the movie in his voice, like just around the house randomly, like.
Right.
Good people of Gotham, you know, like, it's
and
yours.
I give it to you,
with that,
the people
with
of Gotham.
With this arm shaking, you know, this to you, claim right. what is rightfully yours. You know, I just keep doing that around the house.
I need like a vest or something so I can grip it high up by the lapels, you know what I mean? Let's not stand on ceremony here, Mr. Wayne.
No, brother, they expect one of us to die in the crash, you know.
You're right. No, he is. He's incredibly effective in that film.
And the other day we were in the car, and I said to my wife, it'd be incredibly painful for you. Before we go. So anyway, I jumped on Sheila E.'s wiki here, and this is amazing. I had no idea. Well, no, she's most well-known for working with Prince, Ringo Starr, mm-hmm. and George Duke. But
interesting.
She is the daughter of Juanita Gardier and the percussionist Pete Escovedo. So her last name is Sheila Escovedo. Do you know that who her godfather is?
Her godfather? No, please be Quincy Jones.
Tito Puente.
Tito Puente.
Yeah, Sheila E's uncle is Alejandro Escovedo, Acevedo, and Tito Puente.
Oh, the drug lord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's Pablo Escobar. So she's got all the, like... One of her brothers, I guess, another Acevedo, was in Santana's band. Well, she's got a lot of...
A musically rich family.
Yeah.
Hey, yeah. I want to mention this. I've been remiss in not mentioning this. If you would be so kind as to help support a great charity, I'm talking about Baseball Town Charities, I would love for you to come and see me this Sunday afternoon. I am at First Energy Stadium in Reading, Pennsylvania, my hometown, and I'll be leading the charge of the entire Chikara gang as we play there at the Vist Financial Plaza inside the stadium, inside where the Reading Phillies play. We are raising money for Baseball Town Charities to take America's sport into neighborhoods that are underprivileged or otherwise. don't have baseball programs, so on and so forth. You can gain admission to this event, which will feature no less than 8 mega matches of Chikara goodness, including yours truly in the ring, for a $5 donation to Baseball Town Charities. The whole thing, of course, is family friendly. So help us support a great cause and bring the whole family out for a fun time on a Sunday afternoon. The doors open up, the gates open up at the stadium at 3:30. First match hits the ring at 4 o'clock. Please come and see us and support Baseball Town Charities. We would really, really, really love to see you.
Indeed. And check out everything that Chikara is doing. There's some great shows over there that you guys have. Chikara Podcast to Go-Go, a once-a-week video podcast.
And, that's right.
You've got My Breakfast with Chikara.
That's right. Well. Every Sunday, My Breakfast with Chikara, part of the Greater Grizzly Productions Network, publishes. If my gabardine tones and my rayon acetate throat haven't been enough for you here on The Grizz, catch me Fridays on The Dob. That's Daddy on Board. Also, I team up with Clayton's beleaguered wife and my co-hostess on The Trending Show virtually every Sunday, where I harass her for about a half hour over the most trending topics on Google and in Twitter.
Indeed. And, you know, I wish you guys would have asked me, because I could have told you flat out that it's shuttlecock.
Yeah, but you know what? A lot of people have also been saying that it's just commonly called the bird.
Oh, and, for badminton? Yeah.
That's right, right. It, by the way, can I just say that the overpronunciation, it's badminton. Okay, no one says badminton.
I like saying it that way. No, I like saying it that way because it adds an air of British pretentiousness to it.
Pomposity.
No, we used to say that around the Daily Buzz offices. We'd say, would you like to go play some badminton? Mm-hmm. So that's why I say it that way.
Would you like to whack a shuttlecock around?
Would you like to play some badminton?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I prefer the bird. You prefer the bird to the shuttlecock, do you?
Hmm.
It is. It's amazing. Have the Monty Python guys, like, shown up or done a run-in at the Olympics yet? Like, they really need to.
They really need to, because there are quite a few sports that would probably end up making it into a Monty Python skit. Like, handball is there. air rifle is an Olympic sport.
Is it? Oh, yeah. My.
Air rifle is an Olympic sport. Now, archery on cable is one of the most watched events. How is archery one of the most watched events?
That's the Avengers effect.
I was thrilled by that.
Like, the CW show Arrow is going to be way up when it premieres.
Anyway, that's going to do it for the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. Anything else on the docket?
No, that about does it. And yeah, thanks again, especially to everyone who joined us in the wake of our interview with Jane Monheit, who was very gracious to spend a little time with us here on the program. It was a great thrill to have her on the show. And we realize a lot of you really only heard about us in the wake of her appearance here. So welcome aboard and help us spread the word. We need your help. The Egghead Army, 2 million and growing, only keeps growing thanks to you and your 5-star reviews in iTunes. Clayton accepts no less than 5 stars. He will get his good back out of storage and hunt you down.
That's
if you
right.
leave anything less than a 5-star review for us in iTunes, won't you go do that for us right now, please? We might read/mispronounce your name on next week's program if you do.
And also support our sponsors by visiting Drobo.com and Cobra.com. And we'll see you back here next week on the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, where we're going to talk about, hey, did you finish Breaking Bad yet?
No, I'm moving so slowly. I'm only 5 episodes.
Like an old folks home. Let's step up.
I'm only
the
5 episodes deep. Yeah, and it's been bad. It's really been a dreadful. It's not well written, and the acting's subpar. But oh my god, the lighting and sound editing's amazing. All that and more next week on The Grizz.
A great review. We'll see you next week, everyone. Bye bye.